The Liar Contacts of Professor Hernandez in 1974, Part 5. Here read from last part. From Chapter 12. Spread the Word. We had walked a more or less long distance. I found my emotions fluctuating in me. Time for me stopped one instant in which my consciousness was full of all that. After that it seemed to me that my own self had stopped there, and I felt horror and terror upon analyzing all, outside of being certain of that which Liah predicted. I knew that she had never told me an untruth. I fervently desired, now that all was only a nightmare. Then my temples began to palpitate. I thought that man himself represented a threat to his own civilization. Liah touched me with her hand, and almost immediately my pulse returned to point, point. However, my mind seemed submerged in a vortex of ideas, a circumstance which later seemed similar to uniting one chaos within another. We returned to the city in complete silence. Almost upon arriving at Mexico City on the open highway, I abruptly said, "Wouldn't it have been better if you has not told me this? Why me? Why not to another who has less knowledge about energy and the atom in a manner that he would not understand so well what you have said? Would it not be better to die than to know all this?" "Professor," she said with infinite delicacy, "you are not the only one who knows. Many more persons of your world have listened than you imagine." "No, Professor, it was not that we selected you that first time for a morbid intention of making you suffer. It occurred to us that you seemed tranquil and at peace with yourself, but above all the undoubtable key was your personality as a tenured professor. We knew that for ethical reasons, if nothing else, you would not share this knowledge with your students, but in the end, after having liberated yourself of your skepticism, you would be able to do something, depending on whether you wanted to do it or not. Nobody was going to obligate you. Professor, you know that your world is most valuable, not only for you yourselves, but for our intergalactic community as well. It is no gift to have been made a party to all of this. It is an imperious necessity to rescue the terrestrial human being as such, to extract him from this turbulent world in which he lives and remove him from the latent dangers like those mentioned. I can do nothing," I stammered. "Perhaps, Professor. Do not underestimate yourself. You are human, but you have the same opportunity to do something as the most modest of the inhabitants of your Earth, or as the most brilliant, if scientists it has." "No, I will never speak of this. They would think I am an alarmist or crazy. You know the planet better than I, and know that they would classify me as demented. You, yes, they would believe you. Don't you want to attempt it yourself and speak to your world in your own words? We have tried not only with the terrestrials of your time, but with persons of years ago, who have already passed on, and we continue trying. Perhaps not today, but tomorrow someone will believe it. Sometime we will succeed in moving the conscience of the scientists of your world. And if nobody believes me? They will not believe you. They will laugh at you. They will accuse you of being a charlatan. But what do you believe is preferable? Be silent, or speak, though they treat you as demented." "In my position, Liah, I would prefer to be silent," I said without the least conviction, but thinking about my children and my wife. "Professor," she said warmly, "your humane characteristics have matured to such a grade that a moment will come in which, knowing the knowledge and overcoming your pride, you will weaken and speak, as though it would be an imperious necessity. You will feel it thus." "Wait," I said, "they are not small, the dangers to those who see themselves so exposed on the earth, because they would feel in a conflagration such as this that we would be completely alone in the universe, exposed to dangers that could not even be imagined by man. You are not alone, because there is life on other planets. No, Lia, I don't want to say that. Let me explain to you. It would be like I believe that the Earth had no friendship with another similar planet. Point. That occasionally could offer help. The same atmosphere created around your planet could bring such isolation, not only internally but externally as well. Yes, it is, as if we had a fort replete with arms, hated the neighboring nations, and boasted all the time, thinking that someone would classify us as cowards if we did not do so. Yes. Point. That. Point. She said pensively. From Chapter 13. Greater Dangers. Lia, do you know which would be the arms that put an end to man? At first I will tell you that the most dangerous weapon that you face is the hate among your own selves. This slowly destroys the psyche most brilliantly. Hate is the generator of much of the ills that actually assault your society. But as you asked me about weapons of another type, I will try to explain something to satisfy your knowledge. To the inhabitants of Inkstria, we worry profoundly about the chemical threat, weapons that have been used without any provocation and which scarcely leave a palpable trace on the Earth. Your two great powers are selling chemical weapons with a profusion never seen before. It is as if your own world was in great haste to annihilate itself. Today in your universities and even your schools, any student who is in possession of an adequate formula can use chemical weapons to attack the nervous system of the human being, and could destroy the neurons of any living being, or simply terminate the vegetable life of your whole civilization. Moreover, the waters of the rivers can also be contaminated, as a form of attack by one civilization on another, and very few times can the origin be detected. In time you will find that a still worse form of degeneration in your own race is attacking the primordial particles of your own DNA, and with a little luck will convert you into a race of mutants. Point. This happens with a certain frequency in your universe. The indiscriminate use of chemical agents produces cellular degeneration already in your skin, in the bloodstream, or at local levels also, and provokes heart attacks and cerebral paralysis. You are actually experimenting with gases that totally paralyze the nervous system of the whole living being, with gases or liquids that are soluble in air or water. The chemical weapons, for their silence and for being difficult to detect, will soon be the ones that are used most frequently. They are used to sabotage, to imprison, to corrupt, destroy, etc. Point. Will this occur soon? Professor, she said, looking at me as a mind of substance, I am moved that you ask me if this will occur soon, when I have told you that, and you give the impression that your time being really valuable, it has not been of sufficient importance to you. Point. What does soon signify to you? This is occurring in your world already. The word pronto is already applicable today. You have already used chemical agents in your Second World War, but today they are more. Point. As they say, stylized. The human being himself has absolutely no idea of his high degree of bellicosity and toward where he is taking this. He has no consciousness of his short-lived steps, and this, thanks to his proposed annihilation, will be accelerated perhaps for your own civilization, dying at the hands of your own brothers. Point. Why? Because even when the human being possesses the capacity for reflection, he is always preponderantly on the offensive, disposed to repel any aggression at whatever cost. The human being of your world is full of fear, fear of living, of suffering, of dying, those weapons not only are bringing an end to those who have the misfortune of coming in contact with them, but also to those who still are not born. Not only the attacked will succumb, but also the attacker who has contact with those weapons will die. For such the aggressor and the victim are sentenced to suffer the same effects by those who have developed the chemical weapons. Chapter 14. A Suicidal Humanity. Is this the most deadly? I asked Lya. The most dangerous and the most sadistic, because it will bring the end of humanity slowly. It makes us sad to know that, while the Earth humans are attacking each other with chemical weapons, another world, situated on the outside or your solar system, also is planning to attack you with weapons and chemical reactions. In my world, could we impede the proliferation of these weapons? You cannot impede them, if the Earth human will not give up his hate. You cannot induce the human being to his full consciousness, nor teach him to live intensely the transitory cycle of existence that you have reserved, nor can we teach him that he is not the owner of any of that for which he fights, and that at least it would be preferable to do something for his humanity, always in majority ascendant. He has damaged his own humanity much and continues to do so. Point. The only thing that can settle his bellicosity is death. Death? I am not here, Professor, to speak of the destruction of the Earth human being. I am in your world to tell you that you should fight for your opportunity to live. Lya. Point. I don't know if I admire you or love you. Point. Or to try to forget you. But if you can fight for the peace of the world that is not even yours, there must be an immensely valiant place in the depths of your heart. We had arrived at the city, and I left Lya at the entrance to the highway, in an uninhabited park. I returned alone. Point. Immensely alone in the profundities of a hostile world, submerged in an ocean shared by other planets. Point. In the immensities of distances never measured before by man. Point. If we persisted in thinking that the fact of having been born made us owners of the universe, until a more powerful civilization than ours comes to conquer us, thanks to the false pride with which we surround ourselves. Point. Point. We may deserve what we get. From Chapter 15. Another Witness. I watched with desperation the passage of what might be my last years. Time was passing too fast for me. At my age I had learned which were the values of life. Every instant, every second, every minute passed with such rapidity that I seriously doubted that many of the projects planned today could be completed tomorrow. My relation with Lya, though having filled my mind with doubts, nevertheless, had filled my existence with longing. Point. A longing that, for what I wanted to fulfill, would require some time. After these many months I still doubted that my chats with Lya should be brought to light. Today I see no obstacle for which they should be hidden anymore. I asked Lya to give me proofs, something that was beyond the knowledge of any scientist of Earth. You shall have it. She told me one day in which she saw my anxiety reflected in my face. Nevertheless I asked her many times, if perhaps that proof could be provided sometime. One night Lya had informed me that she knew of another person who had had an experience similar to that of mine. He was a man who lived in Chicago. That was all she would tell me. I argued that I didn't know if I would be able to go there, thinking of my work, my time certainly being saturated in the laboratory at the University 1. Lya gave that man's name as 1 Thomas Haskins. You want a proof? I know that you will go. They will ask you to go. She asserted this in a manner that left me with no doubt. It would require much time for me to solicit permission to absent myself from the laboratory, or to leave my work to anyone with sufficient capacity to continue the labors I had initiated. Nevertheless, my life, since knowing Lia, was overfilled with surprises. 1 month after our conversation, the rector called me to his office and gave me this notice. "Doctor, we have selected you to represent us in the annual conference on social dynamics that will take place in the city of Chicago." I would represent my country precisely in the place that Lia had selected for a very special appointment to. 2. The professor immediately recalled the conversation about proof. Here he suddenly had one of his many proofs, but it was for him alone. He would never be able to convince anybody else that Lia had told him this in advance. Inside of me I thought, "This is an emotion I shall always enjoy." Point. The idea of knowing that that would occur filled me with joy. Who would have thought that the rector might have overheard of my conversation with Lia? Something without precedent was happening in my life. It was as if this was the axis of a magic circle. I accepted the assignment to represent myself before the international body in the name of my country. Point. But at the same time I accepted the right to meet another man, who, like myself, had had a similar experience. Point. Of having known an extraterrestrial being. A slight gas in my stomach provoked a nausea in me upon arriving in Chicago. It was the sensation of something unknown that provoked a nervous reaction in my stomach. It snowed copiously, in such form, that, after my arrival the news said the weather had left a new record for snow for that year. In the center of the city the thermometer registered 22 degrees below zero. It was already night when I registered with the administration. The heat inside was pleasurable. The climate conditioning functioned marvelously well. Once inside my room, absorbed, I pressed my face to the window, abstractedly observing the slow fall of the big snowflakes. Point. A beautiful spectacle for me. I watched the going and coming of people I did not know. Races mixed among themselves, as if in a swarm in an urban area of impressive dimensions. People coming from diverse parts of the world surrounded one another. Point. So close physically but all seemed indifferent to each other. 3. Our indifference to each other, as compared to the its concern for us all, was overwhelmed Professor Hernandez. I put on my overcoat and a scarf and decided to go out despite the severity of the weather. The cold was intense and my face froze in a moment. I walked rapidly to get warm. Soon I began to feel a part of this world, people walking by my side without taking notice, without speaking. Signs in English, scintillated in the falling snow. Voices lost themselves, as murmurs in the winds that howled in the ears of whoever did not wear protectors like I. Nobody seemed to advertise that they were. Point. In a human world, inexplicably, like other places, this city had also fallen into a routine of being, and made, almost by inertia, all that was there, by custom, seem understood. I stopped in front of a store. An interminable file of people with packages in their arms flowed by. I watched them pass like automatons. Point. Soon I began to make a comparison between what must be the world of Lia and that which was of this planet which I called my own, without belonging to me. 4. The flow of profound knowledge was beginning to make Professor Hernandez feel a stranger in his own world. He felt akin to Lia in some strange way. She had hinted several times that he might be one of them, having incarnated in this world at this time for a purpose. Suddenly a question sprang into my mind: how did our world come to be, as it is now? What was it that persuaded our humanity to saturate themselves with innumerable superfluous things on the altars of desire for commodities without feeling? Why invent machines that transport man, robots that replace the laborer, devices that isolate the conversations within the same family? I continued walking, and beyond, in a showcase, I saw a television turned on. At the moment there appeared news about a disturbance in Ireland, trouble in Iraq, Iran, genocides in Afghanistan, Syria, Poland, etc. It amazed me. These people that right now were walking together with me, and who hurriedly came out of the store, and even myself, seemed totally unaware of those news reports. How had we arrived at this limit of indifference before the pain and the misadventure? Where had we lost the tie, and from where had come the violence and the desire to kill? Is man extinguishing the intelligence of man, in such a manner that now it rivals that of the animals in bestiality? Just where have we lost the delicate balance that determines the point of convergence of sentimental feelings and of hate? I sunk my numbed hands into my pockets and continued my walk in the snow. Soon I remembered that upon arriving at my hotel they had advised me not to go out after 6 in the evening, and that, if I did, it was at my own risk. I was not afraid. Suddenly, for my own security, I gave up having any valor. The violence was a new form of manifestation of being, as was the music of the tango in its time, and the Beatles in the 60s. I noticed, by the number of persons that passed me, that even the danger of an attack had been adopted as some daily thing. Where do they all go? That same man perhaps hoped that something or someone would make a change. The hope of a tomorrow was perhaps the only way which he could resist the vicissitudes of life. I stopped on a corner, stood against a wall, and with great difficulty lit a cigarette. My hand shook. Would I be better in the morning? I thought about my meetings with Lya. I knew that from then on I would be noticeably sensibilized. My conversations with her had worked a transcendental change in me. It was as if suddenly a veil had been rent, showing the nakedness of a latent reality. Point. Threateningly. I knew that my life was divided into before and after Lya, and that all that had occurred after my first encounter with her had produced profound repercussions in my state of spirit. Inexplicably, I no longer saw myself in this world as an individual being, ego-centered. Point. No, now I placed within what I truly am only the smallest, almost infinitely small, cellular part of an organism called humanity. To my mind came the possibility of being that organic part that had been invaded by cancerous cells. Point. Could it be true that the world is on the point of succumbing? I could not know. On this point Lya had been discreet. She had advised me of various dangerous situations, but she did not answer when I asked her to tell me if we would survive into a future not beyond the end of the world. I felt, nevertheless, something inside of me, like an agitated sea at times, or like a sky at the beginning of a tornado. I intuitively felt something that I could not decipher. For the moment a change had come over me. Now I was more receptive to things that previously I myself had repudiated. Now it was different. My great longing was that all of humanity could experience the same, as I felt, when I saw the stars or the moon or the great infinity. I wanted to transplant in each one of those around me the concept that Lya had projected, concerning a world full of peace, where the people that inhabited it would profoundly respect life, where the most brilliant of scientists is no more than the most modest of its inhabitants, in a world whose principal quality is the value of sentiments, of simplicity, of humility, of honesty. Point. In short, that range of virtues which on this planet have been put aside 5. The professor is coming to know what the true meaning of love is. I know that I am speaking of an utopia, but is it not the falsehood of the manipulation of the atom, with all its virtues and defects, as well as with the neutron, the neutrino, and the proton, to cite only some, lurking in a world that is becoming ever more violent? I see through these things, trying to find the good in each one of them, analyzing the situations at a world level, and I see with sadness the great human errors that affect thousands of lives of innocent human beings, whose undue fault was to have been born here on Earth. Laya, I said inside of me, I want to shout to myself that I am living only a nightmare. I can observe my movements and I am aware that the ultimate fiber of my being moves through the urge to live. Why? Point. Why? What is it that you have done to me, Laya? Why not, instead of sensibilizing me, didn't you harden me to the end that I could adapt to the crudeness of this world? Why not, instead of coming to me, didn't you make me come to you, to your world, to your galaxy? Laya, you have come to me knowing all this accumulation of uncertainty that I drag along my road. You have tried to open my eyes by transforming that which blinded my mind. You have opened a window into the unknown, and I, the ignorant, the incredulous, after looking out, doubted that there would be anything there despite having seen with my own eyes. I don't know if it has hurt me or benefited me. I do not know how much man himself does not know, or whether to live will prejudice him or will benefit him. You have involved me in the same vortex of feeling, coming to make me love life, but I am left with one simple question: how to live it. I don't know if, as man I am now within a labyrinth, or if the labyrinth is immersed within me. Laya, after all you have given to my life, I am today in a dilemma. Perhaps it would have been preferable to ignore all that you have put before me, or perhaps I should have opted to remain in doubt of the knowledge. I know that apart from you yourself, later, exactly, since that first circumstantial moment in which I met you, I have not been the same. With frequency I consider myself common, sensible. What have you done to me? I believed in the past that my life had been rich in knowledge, but you, with all you have told me, have enriched the present and belittled the past. All has now taken on a strange shade to the eyes of others, but beautiful and fascinating in my view. 6. The professor has gone past the point of being able to communicate his new knowledge to his colleagues. He knows they would never believe him, and might even turn against him. Now I know that there exist as many galaxies as worlds in the universe, and that many of them are populated by intelligent beings. Laya has told me so. That enormous plurality of worlds could be equal or more beautiful than the Earth, the planet on which I am now. But for me, having been born here has been one great adventure. What am I going to do with all this she has left me? Disseminate it or save it for myself at the pain of losing my mind? Now, as I try to see through the eyes of my own world, I do not know how it will come out to the last fiber of each human being. It all seems insensible, cold, and nevertheless it is not, because the life that has emerged from that is indescribable, as a marvelous fusion that springs forth from nothing, and, for the same, in its way, this life of mine, is precipitated toward the same intangible point from which it started. Point. Is that the destiny of man? What will happen in the days to come? Laya. Point. Come back and take my hand. On doing this, inside of me will vibrate the words, I love you 7, because through this platonic love I feel, for you I have been able to love humanity intensely. I believe I have now discovered your legacy, love. It is the same love that converts a hurricane to a light breeze and provides the rains that wash all the stains from the soul. Love is what makes possible the saturation of beings on the planet, the love that survives in the tempests of an angry sea. I know that you are nearby, but the dimensions of this love frightens me. When you spoke of the manifestation of matter as something much more than what we are aware of in our world, you had good reason. I asked you at that time, point, where did man come from? And your response was, the being is ethereal, invisible, is strong, grand, and powerful. It is pure energy in spiral vortice. As it has total polarity, it can be found in its antithesis, for it is then that it manifests as matter, taking on this aspect as a garment. The ethereal being then can learn to laugh, to cry, to shout, to feel, sing and love, but the finality of matter also is known to destroy. Yes, Laya has said to me through words of profound content that I am a man more tailored in the interior than much of humanity, implanted with something indescribable which is as fantastic as incomprehensible. 8. 7. One can imagine the feelings of Professor Hernandez's wife upon reading passages like this in his diary. She has no basis for accepting the extraterrestrial nature of these contacts, and is left with no alternative but to believe that her husband of so many years is being taken away from her by a clever Earth woman. 8. Here is another reference to a greater soul development for Professor Hernandez than most of his contemporaries. Many UFO contactees are eventually told that they have voluntarily incarnated on this planet at this time to carry out a specific preordained mission. This was noted in the cases of Edward Meyer and Edwin White, as well as with a great many others. How did I come to love you? How bold of me to feel love for you? Do I love you for yourself or for what you represent, or for admiration, or for all these things together? I was surprised. I had withdrawn from this world by means of my imagination. Within this city and its inhabitants and its traffic was a fictional world such as has been converted in each one of the great cities. Suddenly I returned to observing the people. Races mixed among each other walked the wide avenues. I was only one point in that city, a minuscule drop of water in an ocean all the time becoming more turbulent. Suddenly I noticed the insignificance of each life. The dimension of matter was infinite, but the power of the mind was immense. The only thing that was in accord with all of this world was the contempt that man feels for himself.